Good afternoon. Make sure what we're doing here. Well, the good news is I'm not going to sing. And if you knew me better, you'd be more excited than you are. Pat asked me to come here about 4 months ago. And I've had 4 months to worry about this. And I told her, no, I don't want to do that. I am very nervous. I'm sure it'll go away, or you will, the other. but I'm honored to be here, and there isn't much I would not do for Patricia. And so when she asked me, I said that I would be happy to come. And I'm thrilled I'm here. I've loved being here, and the fashion show was so classy and wonderful. And you're truly blessed to have Pat running things. And she runs everything and does it well, you know, a little head in a swirl storm going around, and this is a beautiful event, and I'm thrilled to be able to come here and share with you. I do not speak publicly, professionally, and that is not a desire of my heart. I've let God know that. But he has blessed me with some interesting things that have happened in my life, and I'm sure some of you can relate to some of the things that have gone on, and I'm sure there's others of you that could share and totally bring us all to our knees with things that you're dealing with. I'll give you a little background on myself. Jim and I are living in Villa Park, California, and I grew up in Indiana in the Midwest, and homespun values and it's wonderful and broke, and but we didn't know it. That was the good news. You didn't catch on in Indiana. They still don't catch on. Jim came up from a bigger metropolis in New York, and we met in college at Purdue University, and I recognized him right away. He was smart as a white rat. I said, come here. Come organize my life, and I will add fun and triviality to yours. And I did my part. Jim was on the dean's list when I met him. He had a perfect index at Purdue in engineering and aeronautical engineering. And the semester after we met, he went on the president's list, but it was not the dean's list. And his grades dropped a bit, but he found much more joy in life. And that was my job. And anyway, we were married in school and came out to California, and we were very excited about that. You know, you're getting out of a condemned apartment. This was a real step up. My mother was mortified the first time she saw our apartment. I said, he has potential, Mom. Hang around. And she was not at all sure. And so we moved out to California, and we were very excited about where our life was going. And you know how when you're young and I noticed that couple that proposed, mine wasn't like that. I'm not even sure I got one. I think he just said, well, I think it's time. You're so romantic. And with that kind of an invitation, who could turn it down? And so anyway, here we were in California and very excited about our future, and we were going to live in, you know, an apartment that wasn't condemned and had doors on all the rooms. It was really great. And so we were very excited about what we were doing. I was a speech therapist, and I had taken a job in the school district, and I thought, oh, this will be great because I love children, anything to do with children, and that's where my heart is. And so I thought, oh, I'll love this. And then I worked 3 months, and I said, Jim, I hate this. Change it. Well, I knew he could do anything, so I was explaining to him that I loved the kids. It was the parents and the schedule and the pay and the time that I had to go and all that I didn't like. And so we were just kind of floating along like normal couples. And, you know, those were big issues to us. Little did I know. And be careful about what you complain about. God will send new material. I didn't know I should have been more grateful then that I just, quote, didn't like my job. I've told him to hold off. I get the picture now. I know how this works. And so anyway, we were just your average little American couple. And but I was being frustrated because I thought Jim was my best friend, well, my only friend except for Pat. And as she said, we met in the hospital, and I was in awe of Pat because of all the things she could do. You know, she could strap on an apron and make anything taste good. And me, we pray after we eat. <You know. laughs> Betty Crocker, I'm not. I don't even want to know her. And, you know, and so I was kind of learning from Pat some of these homemaking skills. I haven't got them all done, but I can hire them done. And so life was going along, and we were introduced to a business and started a business, and Jim was able to get out of engineering, and so we thought, oh, now this is perfect. Now life is perfect. We can work together, and we're going along, and this is awesome. And we had our first child, Heather, and that's where I met Pat. And so this was a perfect little family. We thought, well, somewhere down the line, we'll add one more child, a boy, of course. Jim, being an engineer, had this plan, plans these things. And about 5 years after Heather was born, we were expecting our second child. And we were very excited about this, and financially a little tight right then, because we were now in a business and self-employed. So I went out and I was doing whatever I could do to get the cash to go to the hospital. I don't know if any of you can relate to that. So I was very excited. I got my cash clutched in my hand with my contractions, and off we went to the hospital. And I had enough money to stay 3 days. I was very excited. And we sat in the car, just to show you how sick you can be. We sat in the car till after midnight, because Jim didn't want to pay the extra night, you know. God has helped him grow a lot. So we went in, and we had this wonderful baby. We had it all planned that we'd come home in 3 days and, you know, get right back. I would get right back to work and doing my thing with our business, and would be just wonderful. I should back up a little bit. When I first met Pat was the first person that ever had really, the first Christian I'd ever met. I'm sure not the first one I'd ever met, but the first one that I knew the difference. Well, not that Indiana's all that backward, but I didn't have a clue what was going on then. So anyway, Pat used to talk to me about the Lord, and I'd smile and nod and go, oh, uh-huh. Well, I didn't have a clue. But it did plant a seed, and now God decided he would start fertilizing. So you never know who you're going to meet and in what regard they will have an effect on your life, but obviously she's had a profound effect on my life. I just didn't recognize it at the time where this was leading. So anyway, we had this wonderful little baby, and we didn't come home in 3 days. I had this plan, but we did not. And Eric was born with a birth defect that's called spina bifida. And it's an open spine, and it can have various degrees of problems. And we had most every one of those within the first 9 months. We didn't come home for almost 9 months. And I looked in that little bag I had, and I said, darn it, we're out of money. I've looked in here. There's no more. He had 11 brain surgeries, he had surgery on hips, and he went in traction, and he had meningitis twice, whatever could go wrong certainly did go wrong. And for the first time in my life, I ran into something that I couldn't control or couldn't work. You know how you get busy and you surely can make this better or make this work or change it somehow. And that was not occurring. So I had another person come into my life, another Pat, and she began talking to me about the Lord, and this time I was listening a little more intently, and I found that when Eric was in the hospital, and it was very intense, you don't just go and sit with a child every day that they don't expect to live and not have it start to break down a lot of the barriers. Eric was in traction, and I can remember I was into very natural, and so I was going to nurse him. But I didn't quite understand that when you nurse them, they don't take them out of traction. And we were in intensive care. This made an interesting situation. If you could just picture this in your mind. I learned at this time you will do for love what you'd never do for money. Anyway, I told the nurse to bring him over, and she just looked a little puzzled, like a hog with a wristwatch. What is the problem here? And I said, well, bring him over. I'm going to feed him. And she goes, no, we don't move him. I immediately knew we had to be close, so that must mean I have to move. And he was up kind of on a high bed, and I thought, oh, dear. It began to dawn on me what we were going to have to do. So I said, oh, well, you know, we've come this far. So I dragged over a chair, got up on it, and nursed this child who was in traction. And I told Jim, you know, you have to have a little levity. I said, well, I'm not getting bigger, but I am getting longer. A little longer. Well, you know. Jim was dying. Jim and I are a little bit different. Well, I'm a little bit different than most, but he is, Jim is, you know, he likes things very planned and organized. And his mind, I don't know if any of you can relate like this, but if he has a thought, it comes out in Roman numeral 1, A, little 1, little B, one of those. And I know someday they will invent something, and all he'll have to do is tweak his ear, and it'll come out on a chip, all read out, you know? And mine, I have notes. He said, why do you take those notes? You're not going to use them. That's not the point. You know, logic is something I'd have to rent. That didn't bother me. And so we approach things a little differently. The checkbook, you know, he writes it all in, everything. You know, what a concept. And because it seems important to him, now I write most of them in. And I said, the only thing is I'm going to round them off. Not bothering with cents, right? How many of you can relate to that? Who needs it? You know, I said, if it bothers you so much, just put enough in there it doesn't bother you anymore. You know. Don't be bugging me about details. So, well, I figured you needed that little background on Jim, you know. Jim has another quality. He has a Thomas guide in his mind. He just mentally closes his eyes, pages flip. You know, I'll say, we need to go to Arcadia now. How do I get there, you know, and he closes his eyes. P6. Ah, yes, of course. You know, I know this. That you can drop him anywhere in the world. Me, I'm with the map facing the direction that I have to go. Driving. Now, it's only inconvenient if I'm driving. The place is, what are you doing? Don't ask. You know. So I have a car phone now, and I'll be riding along with the kids, and I'll be somewhere where I don't know where I am, which is commonly happens. And I'll get Jim on the phone, and I'll say, don't say anything, just tell me. I'm at this intersection, which way? You know. And he'll go, I can't believe, I said, I don't want to hear that. Just tell me which way to go. You know, they want to hem and haw. I can't believe you're doing it. Why? I've been doing it for 23 years. Why can't you believe it? And so, you know, we approach things a little differently. And the Lord has helped me to appreciate that in Jim. And for sure, it's helped Jim appreciate that in me. So that, you know, that's one of the reasons you have to stay married a long time. A real long time, so you can start to appreciate those little differences in each other without pinching their heads off. And it's funny, when we were dating, it was cute that I didn't enter him in the checkbook. Wasn't nearly as cute when it was his money. Oh, they're funny. So anyway, here we find ourselves, and another interesting little tidbit is that I called my mother, who was at home with Heather at the time, and I hadn't really spoken about what was going on when we first found out about Eric, because I don't know about some of you, but I'm very private, and I was just trying to, I guess I thought I was going to go away and fix it and then come out and present it, you know. And so I called my mother and I said, put the house on the market. Oh, this is after. Oh, hello, Mom. Yes, we have a new baby boy. You know, put the house on the market. We need money because our insurance only covered the first 2 weeks. And it began to look obvious to me that we were going to be there a tad longer than 2 weeks. And so we had no insurance after that, and we went thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars in debt. And so we began to have a new goal, and that was to own Eric. Pink slip on our child. I said, I know we can do something here, and sure of it. The doctors were helping us. Well, what do you think we can do? Big garage sale. And so this was the frame of mind, and I don't mean to make light of it. It certainly wasn't a light situation. It was an incredible situation, but you kind of do what you have to do. But the good news is that's when the Lord came into my life. And then conversations with Pat and I became very different. And I noticed one thing. You know, when you're in the midst of trial and you're just in such an agitated state, plus if it happens to revolve around a child who's laying there in terrible pain, you don't do 9 brain surgeries, 11 brain surgeries, some 3 in a weekend we had. I mean, you know, I don't want to even paint a picture, but you really start to lose that veneer and that reserve. And I did notice something. I said, you know, the only people I could tolerate in the room with me were Christians. And I didn't really understand why that was. But I do know that the Lord just gave them special words of comfort. And just they were just different. And so many times it isn't even the words you say. It's just the fact that you're there. And that's what the Lord started bringing those people into my life at that time. And it's like when you're pregnant, you realize everybody's pregnant. You know, you see everybody that's pregnant. Well, when I became a new Christian, I finally looked around and went, oh, I ran into all these people, nurses at the hospital that the Lord would send that were Christians, and they brought incredible comfort to me. And so we went home from the hospital finally after all these surgeries, and they told us that Eric would probably, if he did live, that he would have incredible problems and brain damage from meningitis. You get it once, you lose your hearing, have heart problems, all these things. And he, of course, had it twice. Now he's had it 3 times. And but the good news is we've got a great God, and he's the one that's going to decide what's going to happen. And I can happily report that Eric is, if he's brain damaged, I'm only grateful I didn't have to live with what might have been, because he is smart as a white rat. And he's at Canyon High School, and he's a junior this year. He's just finishing up his junior year. And when he went as an entrance exam for Canyon High, he took the math exam and placed higher than anyone who had ever taken it placed. And so, you know, don't listen to doctors always. I don't want to insult anyone, but they don't know the future. Only the Lord knows what the future holds. And the other thing I would say to you, and some of you are in the midst of trials right now, whether it be with children or whether it be with spouses or financial or all kinds of things that can be going on in our lives, and you get a group this big, you've got lots of trials out there, that you don't know when to be discouraged. If someone had asked me when I had Eric, was at a low point in my life, well, I would have said it was unbelievable. Guess again. But it has turned out to be almost the single greatest blessing in my life, because it put everything else into perspective. It just sharpened the image and fortunately let us know what our real purpose is here, and that we are children of God. And so, you know, sometimes you can feel like things are just awful, but we don't know when to be discouraged. And then other times when things look great, you just have no idea how it's going to turn out. And so, you know, I just offer that little bit of hope to people that are struggling right now, that there will be joy again later. And so anyway, we brought Eric home, and he learned to walk with braces, and cutest little thing you've ever seen. He's very, very tiny. And he said, how do you like being half the size of everybody at school, Eric? And he says, well, I'm used to it. You know, he's very little. He's the only one in a wheelchair, but he just spins around and in and out. And, you know, they look around. There he goes. He looks like their mascot. He doesn't look like a student. And but he is not hung up on outward things. And what a great thing. And he was in a science class, and they were teaching about evolution. And Eric sat in the back, very kind of quiet. Eric is very quiet. And but he thought, oh, I better jump in here and straighten these poor fools out, you know. And and if you knew Eric, it'd be doubly funny. And so finally he puts his little hand up in the back, you know, and teacher goes, yes, Eric? And he goes, I didn't come from a monkey. And he's just kind of sitting there, teacher goes, yes, what do you say to a kid that says that? You know? And he says, I'm a child of God. And put his little hand back down, and the kid next to him goes, all right, Eric, you know. I mean, they're so busy trying to be cool. But he came home, and he, when they had the exam, he wouldn't answer any of the questions about evolution on there. You see, some of you might wonder if you're a child of God, but Eric has felt God's hand on him. He knows where he came from, and that he leans on the Lord every day for his life. And so I said, Eric, you never know someday what that might mean to some of those kids in that class. You know, it was very brief and very quiet, but I don't think there was any question. No, exactly what do you mean by that, Eric? I don't think they were confused. And so anyway, we're going along, and everything is awesome, and we had a big task to do. Now we needed to earn some money. I thought, well, that'll solve a lot of the problems. The doctors thought so too. And so we got to work. But I can remember sitting at a table when we first got Eric home and saying, my goal is to want again, because you just felt drained. And some of you that have, you know, survived certain things, you know that feeling. And I thought, I don't know if I'll ever feel lightness again, where I just feel abandoned. Life is light, because we didn't know what we were facing, and, you know, around the corner what might be happening with Eric. And anyway, we got to work, and that's what I do best. And so I threw myself into work, and Eric and I went out, and I did whatever I had to do to make money. And, well, not whatever I had to do. Scratch that from the day. Forgot myself for a minute. And but you know what I mean. Pride was not an issue. I just needed to do what needed to be done to start paying the bills. And, you know, the Lord honors that. If you will stop worrying about it and stewing over it and start putting some feet to it, then he jumps in there and honors that. And he did. And he blessed us unbelievably financially. And we were able to pay Eric off. I was so grateful. In 1978, yes, we owned him free and clear. And we celebrate that date still. And the doctors were thrilled. And we got new insurance. And it costs about, I don't know, $25,000 a year or $30,000 a year, but that's nothing compared to what we spend a year. So things were going along, and then we decided to have one more child, and that was a son who we had in August of 79, and we went off to the hospital, and, you know, it's just we have such a great God, because when we went off to the hospital this time, if I'd had to stay 9 months, I could have, and that was a good feeling. And I can't tell you what a joy it was. This baby was born. My doctor said, now, Nancy, you should have amniocentesis, you know, and you've had one child. I said, let me save you all that oxygen. I said, I'm not having one because I'm not interested in the results, because I'm not going to do anything about it. So, you know, whatever the Lord has in mind, so far he's done a pretty good job, and we're just going to move forward. And so we did, and the doctor came to the hospital. We had this baby, perfectly healthy, no problems. I don't even know if I can convey to you the joy. I just thought I could never feel that kind of joy again, but obviously it does come back, and seasons of time. And anyway, David was born and healthy and happy, and we stayed in the hospital for a few days, and I never let him out of my sight. The nurses one day, I know he's staying right here. Put him in a drawer at night. He's not going anywhere. It was the first time I'd held a baby in years that was not attached to cords and tubes and, you know, traction and staples in the head, and, you know, he just was, I couldn't believe I could run around with him. It was unbelievable. I ran down the halls with him. I carried him everywhere. That baby didn't get out of my sight ever for months and months. I felt like a human pacifier, you know. We traveled all over the world. He babbled with an accent, you know. He didn't go anywhere without me. And, you know, the great news is life is contrast. And the reason that was such an incredible celebration and so exciting to have him was because of what had gone on before with Eric. And so some of the down times and some of the very hard times in our life, the one purpose they serve is to make us appreciative of the things that come later. Because when Heather was born, I was grateful and I was excited, but I was, you know, whining about no sleep. And well, I'd run to bed. Jim and I, we had a deal. The first one to get in bed, the last one to get in bed had to feed Heather. So we nearly broke our legs. I'm not getting in there. You know, what a difference 11 years later when I brought home our third baby, and I wouldn't have missed getting up for anything. Anyway, life began going along great, you know, and you think you've got it together. Oh, I have this nice little sweet little ministry, this little handicapped child ministry now, and I love children. We got very involved in at homes for abused kids, and, you know, and now we've kind of gone through our trials, right? You ever feel that way? Mm-hmm. Don't tease God with that one. I know better now. And so anyway, we thought everything was just rolling, and Eric was doing well, hadn't had surgeries in a long time, and then Eric had an accident at school and was rushed in for surgery and came out and had a stroke. And anyway, he's recovered. We are very grateful. Again, you get very grateful for where things were. You know, you can start complaining a few days, and then you realize how wonderfully grateful you really are, even with what you're handling, as long as it doesn't get worse. And we learned another valuable lesson about being grateful for, you know, I was complaining outside the surgery room. It was our anniversary and Christmas time, and I was thinking, oh, I can't believe we're going through this again, but never thinking he could come out worse, not being grateful, you know, and thinking, Lord, I know he's in your hands and whatever. Just standing out there, and I don't know if you've ever done that, but just complaining about, you know, Christmas interrupted, poor Eric, you know, and all this. How little did I know that a few hours later it wouldn't have mattered what was going on as long as he was alive. And so anyway, he lost the use of the right hand, and my mother was there, and we were all kind of vigil, and when Eric finally came around, he couldn't speak. That did come back, and wonderful. Not shut up now. And we did get that back. And if I had to pick between an arm and speech, I would pick definitely speech. And my mother said, oh, Eric, I can't believe you can't move that hand. Good, Mom. So we haven't taught her proper hospital etiquette yet. She's coming along now. We don't let her near the hospital. Let me help you with this, Mom. And but Eric, ever positive, says, oh, it's okay, Grandma. I'll learn to play the piano one-handed. Oh, well, that's sort of what I would have thought if I lost one hand. Sure, I'll learn to play the piano one-handed. But what a spirit the Lord has provided for this child. And so then we get back up, and things are going along and wonderfully. And, you know, if I had a desire in my life that was important to me, it would have been to be, you know, a wonderful mother. And I watched Pat and modeled lots of things after. I learned many, many wonderful things from Pat. And except cooking. And she's still working on that one. Yeah, I have an asbestos apron. And I've used the sucker a couple times too. And a wonderful mother. And those wives and being a wonderful wife and mother was key and critical. You should also know that people that have tragedy in their family or a handicapped child, the divorce rate is over 90%. I mean, that's almost unfathomable. And the mother usually ends up with the child. And so many, 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 many thousands of handicapped children are being raised by a mother by herself. And so, you know, but the Lord intervened and, you know, change and grow and mature. And when I saw the topic, Count It All Joy, I thought, oh, yes. First time I saw that, and I don't know if you're familiar with that scripture, but it's a wonderful one. James 1:2. And I loved, James was Jesus' brother, and I loved the way he started this. Greetings. Somewhat similar to the military. And he says, count it all joy, my brethren. I might not have started with that, you know, if I was writing a letter to kind of give encouragement to the Christians out there that didn't have a body like you have. Count it all joy. And I might have weaved that in somewhere. I don't think I would have started with, count it all joy. Knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance, and let endurance have its perfect result, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. And I have to say that when trials came, it wasn't my first thing to go, oh, yes, this is such a joy. You know, you may, but you're probably further along than I was. But that was not my first thought. It did come along eventually. He did bring that around. But I can truthfully say now, the older I get and the more I deal with it, to start off with first thanking him and counting it joy, because he has a seed of wonderfulness out there when we get through a little bit of rain and darkness that's going on. And so anyway, we're going along, and this was in about 1985, little did we know that Heather was having a few challenges. You know, things were happening so fast and furious at that point with Eric, and in now the hospital, and he had 7 brain surgeries in 3 months, and another bout of meningitis, and just horrendous stuff going on. And Heather was having difficulties, but I can't believe how oblivious you can be. Well, I can now, but I when I look back, I go, I can't believe we missed so many things that we did not see. I don't know if you have teenage children, but I was sure mine were perfect. You know, that was one thing I kind of checked off the list. Thank you, Lord. Don't have to worry about that. And all of a sudden, we realize there's lots of problems happening with Heath, but you keep solving them, kind of one at a time. And I'd go to Pat, and I'd go, speak to me. Tell me something wise and wonderful. And I'd get in her lap. Am I uncomfortable for you? I don't care. Get closer. I'm getting in your pocket in a minute. But we kept solving them and thinking, it'll go away. You know, it'll change. She'll get through this. Or, you know, thinking, well, this is the way kids are. And then it got worse and more problems. And I was at the church one day, and we were talking about Eric with this couple that come and pray for Eric all the time. And Ruth says, well, Nance, have you ever considered drugs or alcohol? I thought, for me? No, I really haven't. No. I didn't realize she meant regarding him. I didn't get that. You know, you can live in such denial, you don't even see it. You can even read the literature, and you have a reason that it's not going on in your home. If I could convey a message to you today, it would be, do not be oblivious to that. If you are having problems and they're out of the ordinary, do seek counsel. Way, after she said that, it was like a bolt of lightning. This was like the untouchable. That could not happen. I already have my one little ministry over here, and we've handled that, and that's about it. But when I left there, I was just oblivious. And I got in the car, and they had given me a little card of a clinic to call and go and talk to professionals about it. And my hand was just shaking. I picked up my car phone, and I called Jim, and I said, meet me at this address. And so Jim met me over there, and we talked to this wonderful little counselor. And he said, tell me in 10 minutes some of the things that are going on with your daughter. And so I did. And so he stopped me. He said, I don't need to hear any more. He said, you don't? And he says, mm-mm. And I said, oh, well, good. You know, I thought, oh, well, we're out of here. And he said, no, I'm sure that she's using something. And I thought I was going to lose Jim right there. So kind of mustered up my strength, and we left and kind of just stared at each other and trying to deny it. You're thinking, no, he's wrong or whatever. Anyway, to shorten the story up, he was not wrong. So we got Heather to go to the clinic. That was not easy, nor was it fun. And you know, we were having a very hard time with this. I was at that clinic, and I was standing at the lowest point in my life through all the things, even when they told us Eric might not live, through all the things that we dealt with. I'd never felt this low, because somehow now I felt terribly responsible. You know, like if you'd have done this different or that different, I didn't spend enough time with her. I mean, you can go through millions of reasons, and some of them obviously have validity, but that was not the point. So I'm standing in this hospital, and I've got this little proverbial styrofoam cup of coffee that we always have at the hospital. And I just collapsed. I just could not believe one's in a wheelchair and one's an alcoholic. And I got one to go. And I'm thinking, I'm going to take Dave and go to Mexico and hide. I'll leave forwarding addresses, Mother Day cards, and things like that. But I wanted to die. And I could not give that to the Lord. I just wanted to hold it in. And I was so angry. But finally, if you love somebody enough, your pride starts to step aside. That's what denial is all wrapped up in, is pride. This cannot happen to me. It cannot happen to my family. And how must it look? Doesn't look like she was happy. I said, I think we can make that assumption. And maybe changes need to be made here. And finally, I released it to the Lord. And that's what you have to do. I finally just said, you love her more than I love her. As I told him with Eric. He loves Eric more than I loved him when he was a baby. And so I finally released that, and I just said, whatever we have to do, let me know. And so we obviously progressed. But from that day forward, the burden was lifted. Now we just had to go through the what do we need to do, how can we help her. And it broke down tons of barriers. I said, Heather, I don't care what you've done. It doesn't matter. It's not important. I love you. However we can help you, that's what's important. And the Lord can restore that life within you. And slowly, things started to change. She was in there 3.5 weeks. We all changed a lot. We all learned a lot. And she came out, and she went to a camp back east for children, a wonderful Christian camp back there run by friends of ours that are in business with us. And again, the Lord put certain people in your life. And I called them and asked if she could come, and they said they not only would not mind, they would be honored. So she went back there and was back there 3 months, and she called me. I mean, we talked daily. We hadn't talked in 3 years, you know, the polite stuff, her lying about where she was going, what she was doing, and that kind of stuff. But we had not really talked in 3 years like we talk now. And we would call and talk every day. We had a $2,000 phone bill, but it was the best $2,000. We had a $2,000 phone bill for 5 months, but it was the best $2,000 a month I ever spent, because I finally found out, because I was listening what was in her heart. And that child today, and this is the good news you can hang on to, you know, a year ago, it was unbelievable. Mother's Day last year, I sobbed my heart out. I was on my way to New Zealand, and Heather was in that clinic, and I thought my life was over. To this year, where she's now calling me, talking every day, and she wants to go to Word of Life Bible Institute and dedicate her whole life to the Lord and be in the ministry and really involved. And she said, Mom, the great news is the Lord healed me, but he also gave me back a sensitive conscience and a sensitive spirit again. And she keeps writing and apologizing for things she did or asking for forgiveness. And that can only come, I want to tell you, not through a clinic, not through anything, counseling. That only comes through the Lord. And he has restored that life and raised her up like no way could I have ever imagined. And so, you know, today, this Mother's Day, I can't even begin to tell you the joy I feel regarding, you know, where our life is and what's going on. And I'm so grateful. And we've had many, many, many unbelievable experiences. I told Jim, now, I'm wondering how this happened. You know, you asked me out in college. I went. I think we shouldn't have done this. You know, I don't know how this happened. You know, we had it all planned. We're going to have 2 children. We're going to have this nice little life and all of this. And none of us really planned. Oh, yes, I'm going to have a handicapped child. Yeah, I'm going to have 30 brain surgeries. He's had 30 to date now. And hip surgery and, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And then I'm going to have another daughter that, you know, is going to have a problem with alcohol and all this. I mean, who plans that? You don't go, oh, yeah, that's my life. Yeah, I'll take that one. Yeah, give me that one. You know, what bonehead they sent? I don't know how you do it. Well, shortcake, what choice do you have? You know, I mean, really, when you get down to it, this is your life. And I decided a long time ago, you only live once, but if you do it right, once is enough. And so whatever you're dealing with, I just want to tell you, we have a powerful God, and he can write anything as long as you're cooperative. And releasing that to him is the best thing you can do. And I had a little poem given to me by somebody, and it was wonderful. And I don't remember all of it, and I didn't bring it. But basically at the end it says, when you step out on faith, one of two things will happen. Either God will put a floor under you, or he will teach you how to fly. You know, and I sometimes been going, I don't see the floor, where are the wings, you know, any time now. But he has everything in his hand, and he is in control. And we go from here tomorrow to Hawaii, Jim and I, for 4 days, just to kind of regroup and spend some time in the Word. And then we come back, and on the 28th of May, the day after Labor Day, we put Eric in the hospital for a spinal fusion. And we have been 2 years in the planning of this. And it's extremely high risk and very involved. And so Eric said, Mom, get pictures and send them out to Christians that you know and ask them to pray that I'll be healed. I mean, it's the sweetest thing you ever saw. And he genuinely has no faith problem. He's right out there. He's looking for that floor. He knows it's there. He's right out there. And so they'll do the first surgery on the 28th of May. And 9 days later, they go in and completely open him from the neck all the way down to do the second surgery. It's a two-step procedure. And he'll be in the hospital about a month and then 6 months in a full body cast. And the great news is he's not worried about that. He's been there before, basically. He just wants prayer that the surgery goes fine. And one time somebody was over to our house when Eric was in a cast before, and it was July, you know, how warm and wonderful it is. And they said, oh, Eric, does that cast bug you? He looked up and he goes, no, does it bug you? Oh, no. Not really, no. And so, you know, it's kind of whatever you're used to. But Eric's our little perspective builder, and every day that I wake up that he's great, I figure life is great. And sometimes we have to have a little better attitude and expectation, and then things start to pick up. But I think joy is a duty and a privilege, not a personality. And so I think we need to work on joy and, you know, whoever the Lord brings into our life to try to spread some joy to them, because obviously they can use it. And the more we do that, the more it lifts us up. So anyway, I've been thrilled to be here with you, and I hope you have a wonderful Mother's Day and a very, very safe trip back. Thank you.
This following message has been brought to you by South Coast Community Church. Their address is 5120 Bonita Canyon in Irvine, California, 92715.